Lawrence Thomas, produced and hosted by me, Akua Holt, of COVID Race and Democracy. Production assistance came from Paulina Vasiliev, Steve Zeltzer, and Stephanie Schubert. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Akua Holt in Houston, Texas. Thank you for listening and see you next week on Sprouts.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Now this coming Thursday on Words and Pictures, we're talking Democracy Under Siege with filmmaker Laura Nix and political cartoonist Ann Telness. Ann Telness recently quit her job at The Washington Post after her cartoon showing billionaires bowing down to Trump was spiked by the paper. She's the star of a new documentary by Laura Nix, the filmmaker behind The Yes Men Are Revolting. So tune in for a special hour-long Words and Pictures this Thursday, February 13th, from 11 a.m. till noon on your community radio station, KBOO.
Hello, I don't even know your name, but I'm hoping all the same, this is more than just a simple hello.
Good morning, Portland. This is Tony Zimbardi, and you are listening to Radical Romance. I'm Tony Zimbardi, a retired psychologist from Los Angeles. I've been living up here in Portland now for 5 years, and this is the show, the advice show for those seeking communication advice in their open or polyamorous relationship. You're welcome to call in, although today we're having major minor technical difficulties at the station. And the line is down to call in, and that line would be 503-231-8187. Right now we are not able to take your call, so I'm going to give a little educational talk. You know, right here in the Pacific Northwest, we have one of the leading relational researchers in the country. He's Professor Emeritus John Gottman at the University of Washington. Oh, we are good for calls now, so if you'd like to call in, 503-231-8187. That was some major good news we just got about the calls. Call in if you're able to and if you'd like to. Anyway, I'm going to talk about John Gottman's relational communication theory. Whether you're in a couple, a throuple, a quad, a quint, whatever you're in, if it involves more than one person, this is the show to listen to and to call in on. Radical Romance, 503-231-8187. And John Gottman, again, the premier researcher. I'm going to talk a little bit about his research and give some of you the lowdown or speed reader's version of his theory. His theory, the relational communications theory. And his research involves studying all sorts of couples. Primarily couples, at least. See, I don't think he's included poly couples or open relationship couples. I'm not quite sure. But I'll give you an example of my favorite study of his, which involved comparing communication styles, particularly around sex, between heterosexual couples, lesbian couples, and gay male couples. The main study on that involved the sexy new neighbor scenario. In that scenario, the twosome was given, and again, the twosome could be a male-male, male-female, female-female. They were given a scenario of one partner saying to the other, "Hey, honey, did you see the hot new neighbor next door? He or she is sunbathing in the backyard. Come look." The research found that among lesbian couples, that scenario was met with anything from indifference to stonewalling. Stonewalling is one of his communication terms. It's basically what it sounds like. You know, giving someone the hand. When someone gives you the stop sign signal, they don't want you to talk. They're not open for communications. That's what the message is. So with the lesbian couple, they got a bit of stonewalling. We'll learn about that in a second and how that plays into communication. With straight couples, more often than not, a fight and tears on the behalf of the female partner. And on gay male couples, when one gay man says to his partner, "Hey, did you see the hot new neighbor in the backyard? God, he's like not wearing anything. He's all lathered up with baby oil. Maybe you should go help him out." Anyway, it's typically met with, "Let's go see. Maybe we can invite him over tonight. We haven't had a three-way in a long time." So Gottman deemed gay male couples among the best communicators when it comes to the issue of sex and sexual attraction and communication about opening things up in the relationship. No surprise, most of you who have gay friends know that the predominant gay relationship is an open one. There was a book years ago called The Male Couple, and in the research in The Male Couple, they talked about how 95% of gay couples together longer than 5 years were non-monogamous. So, yeah, you all know that. I know. So, anyway, now getting to Gottman's specific communication theory, whose nickname is the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, a biblical term. But anyway, four things that will kill your relationship, folks. Number one is criticism and blame. We've all been criticized by our partner from time to time. Defensiveness, meaning you immediately react to whatever it is your partner has communicated to you. And I'm not just talking couples now. I'm talking back again, whether you're a couple, throuple, quad, quint, whatever you happen to be involved in terms of a romantic relationship with more than one person. Criticism, blame is number one. Number two, defensiveness. Number three, contempt. Contempt can be as simple as rolling your eyes when your partner is speaking. Any member of the relationship. And lastly is stonewalling, which I just referred to a second ago. Basically giving the hand. You're not letting the person through. You're indicating you're not wanting to communicate. The topic is off limits. That's stonewalling. So these are the four horsemen of the relationship criticism and blame, defensiveness, contempt, and stonewalling. The four horsemen of the relational, I don't know why I keep getting stuck in the word, apocalypse. What all relational therapies are about is teaching the people in the relationship replacement communication skills. That's what all couples and any kind of relational therapy is about, is replacement communication. So maybe instead of reacting to the criticism or reacting that you feel that you're blamed, you can respond. You can choose to respond lovingly or not. What all counseling involves is learning how to communicate and respond more lovingly to those involved in the relationship. You could look John Gottman and his trained therapists up online. They are Gottman-trained clinicians, an easy thing to do. Or you can call in. Again, the phone number is 503-231-8187. Our minor difficulties have been taken care of, so the lines are open. Please call if you have a relationship question about any partner in your current relational universe. And I'd like you to take a moment yourself of the last time you may have responded to one of your partners with either criticism or blame, defensiveness, contempt, or stonewalling. It all starts with the self. You can't look outside the self until you've looked inside yourself. And what is your communication style? Is it a loving style, or is it a closed-off style, or a reactive as opposed to a responsive style of communication? We can all either react or respond. Respond means you're taking a moment to think before you speak. Think of SOTA, S-O-T-A, not soda like soda pop, SOTA, S-O-T-A, like Sotomayor, the Supreme Court Justice. Stop, observe. So stop what you're saying. Take a minute and observe, meaning ask yourself, am I being defensive right now? Am I being critical or blaming right now? Am I reacting in a contemptuous way? Or am I closing myself off from this person I'm involved with? Those are the places to look in terms of how can I communicate openness in my relationship and not set us up for failure. Whatever two people we're talking about, and again, it doesn't matter how many people are in your relationship, I'm sure there's a limit somewhere. How many people can you be involved with at one time? And by the way, at some point today, my handy dandy assistant, Keen, will be in to talk about his own experience in the past of being in a polyamorous relationship. So I'll let you know when he's about to come in and talk with me about that. I'm excited to hear. I have no idea. We've never talked about it before. I didn't know that was in his past. It certainly is in my past and my present. This year, as opposed to only two other years in my life, I've bought multiple Valentine's cards. I mean, it's 48 hours away, folks. You better get out there and go to wherever you purchase your cards and buy at least one, if not more, persons a Valentine's card. Let them know how much you care. Make sure if you write anything in it that it's not going to include any of the four horsemen. No criticism, no blame, no defensiveness, no contempt, no stonewalling. This year I bought four cards, I believe. One for my sugar daddy, Ken Dahl. I'll refer to him quite often since I seem to spend the most time with Ken Dahl, and Ken Dahl drops me off here at the station and picks me up when I'm through. One for my roommate, Adam. Adam is a total sweetheart. He was mine and Ken Dahl's favorite flirty waiter once upon a time at the old Spaghetti Factory at the South Waterfront. And then we sort of brought Adam into our relational concept between the two of us. And the three of us, for quite some time, considers ourselves to be a family. So me, Ken Dahl, not Kendall, Ken Dahl, like Barbie's Ken. He's a doll. So anyway, that's my nickname for Sugar Daddy. He treats me well every day. Often refers to himself as the good fairy. And he's a very good fairy. Everybody should have a good fairy or a sugar person in their life. So let me get back to my list of Valentine's cards. One for Ken Dahl, one for Adam. That's two. And one for the new person I'm seeing, who I'll call Stanley. One for Stanley, one for Adam, one for Ken. That's three. I'm so sorry, folks. I got off the topic of SOTA. Stop, observe, think. Think before you speak. And speaking is action, the A of SOTA. So make sure you think before you speak to any person in your intimate relationship. That's what I'd like you all to focus on and anticipate on today. If you'd like to call and you have a question or a comment for me, 503-231-8187. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Feel free, and I think I'd like to wait just another minute or two before I invite my special guest and always special assistant here, as long as he's working on my show, Keen, into the room, and we'll have a little chat about polyamory. I remember years ago, the first time I bought three Valentine's Day cards, I was so frickin' lazy that I bought three identical cards. And this year, I put a little thought into it and got cards based on each person's personality style and what I thought they might appreciate. And I wrote them something personal in the card that I thought they might appreciate as well. let them know what it is about them that I appreciate. I think it's important in any relationship, whether it's romantic, sexual, or, I mean, we live in a relational world, folks. You have relationships with your neighbors, relationships with your coworkers. Freud had said that all relationships are power struggles, and I do believe they are. Everybody wants to fight for dominance and control, and of course getting their way in any relational experience they have in life. So I think we're going to wait maybe one more minute before we have our guest Keen come in. We'll listen to a little bit of music first. And we're back. You're listening to Radical Romance, the relationship call-in advice show for those in either open or polyamorous relationships. I'm here with my special in-house guest today. His name is Keen.
How do you do?
Hey, Keen. So this is a completely cold conversation we're going to have today, meaning I have no forewarning of what you're going to talk about. Right when I walked in this room this morning, Keen said to me, "Hey, I have experience with the polyamorous relationship in my past." And I thought, okay, well, great. Let's hear about it. So here he is to tell me and you all about his polyamorous relationship he once had.
Well, in short, I've been doing this for years, probably around 10 or so years. Throughout various relationships. I was not very serious about relationships ever since my 20s. I don't think that's anything new for most people, especially in the cities. but yeah, definitely experimented with open relationships since my 20s. And still, I find it a bit more comfortable. Currently married quite happily, and we started the marriage knowing that we would be poly, open in some sort of way, which I now recognize to be called monogamish. Mm-hmm. So very comfortable that very comfortable with ourselves, but also quite open to whatever else might come up as long as we communicate quite well about it, which has been the key to my better relationships. There has been a long or a large amount of learning throughout my poly journey.
Let me ask you this, since you're involved in a marriage with a woman, as opposed to myself, who was involved in a marriage with a man, and that led to my polyamorous behaviors that still exist. So what is it like? I can tell you, for gay men, sex can be like sport, and we're just thinking, I'm in the mood for a three-way tonight, are you? And that's sort of how it goes. How does it go in heterosexual relationships?
Well, not entirely hetero, but I would say that we're explorative, at least in what we desire. But we recognize that it's easier said than done to actually go ascertain the types of relationships that could be more exciting. Not more, just new, you know, as it's good to spice up one's married life, I hear. And I'd say we are in a 7-year itch, and that's okay. I kind of expected it. But also, we are more tied down than either of us ever knew we could be. Being, I've been with someone for about 3 years plus a little bit, and she has not even made it that far prior. And then we, you know, met each other online, fell in love, and you know the rest, up to this point at least. And
for those looking online, what worked for you guys? What was it, a particular website?
I think it was OkCupid. Yeah. You know, trying to be a little more serious about finding a good relationship rather than just finding something exciting for now. But I've always had the policy of finding a friend first. Despite that, we found each other as friends first, at least having a texting sort of relationship. But then when I finally met her, it went very quickly from then, shall we say. Got pretty exciting from then. And then one thing led to another. We moved in probably a little early to share a house, just because I was kind of used to shacking up, and I think she needed to be out of where she was, as she'd been there for quite some time and needed something new.
How long before you shacked up?
Good question. Not terribly long. I think we'd been dating for less than a year before we shacked up.
In my estimation, that is quick as well. Yeah. My personal rule for me, I don't need to suggest that everybody needs to do things the way I do them. But anyway, for me was, I like to wait a year before I move in with anyone or have them move in with me, or we go find a new place together. So yeah, my rule of thumb is a year.
That's a pretty good rule of thumb, I'd say. It may have been a little short of that. But what actually was very beneficial, a benefit I didn't see coming, was that she had been pretty much abstinent for years even. And to my surprise, she liked me well enough to break that and to be with someone completely. And I hope she's not mad at me for saying, but she actually bowed to me, just kind of in like a kinky way. Like, I did not expect that, but she was showing her devotion, you know, like she really appreciated me and I really felt it. And I appreciate the heck out of her too, obviously. Still very happily married.
How long from before you met to when you married?
Three or so years. Yeah, I wish I could remember on the spot. I'm a little nervous from being on the air, but at least 3 years, around five perhaps. Yeah, because we've only been married a few years now. And it's been like 8 years, so around there.
Who brought up the topic of open or polyamorous behavior first?
Yeah, that's a great question too. I'm not actually sure. I think it's just been in casual conversation since I've known her. Not definitive. I will say that when in our more kinky play moments, there, that's when the ideas would come up, like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we had so-and-so to interact with? And then we eventually started actually talking about that, like, huh, how would that actually play out? And I'm happy to say that the more you talk about the details of that, the more you realize, okay, what is actually open to do? What's actually, I hate to use this term, but on the menu. And yeah, you can find also what you are a little sad about. However, the more talk you have between each other, honestly, the less sad I've become. Like, oh, well, I totally understand why you feel that way. And I, since I am madly in love with you, I can totally make that that compromise. Because I also recognize that when you have things you would want, even if you didn't plan them, but all of a sudden you recognize that you want now, because you're talking with me and because you love me, you're making compromises with me too.
I think that's the definition of love, what you just described, that I love you enough to let you experience what it is you feel like would make you happy at this point in time that we're sharing together.
Yeah, and I've found that it can change too, especially with a relationship this long. Things are subject to change. And yeah, keep on talking about everything that does change. In fact, one thing that I was not expecting, but I feel like I should have, she had found a relationship that turned into more of a romantic thing online. She'd been friends with this person online for quite some time, maybe a handful of years. And then she asked me, like, would this be okay if it turned into something else? Because I feel this different kind of tingle toward them. And it quickly became like, oh, they're actually going to visit the area from and see some friends, and what would this be like? And I was like, well, yeah, it's got a bit of a surprise, but let's try it, see where we're at. And the thing that changed, right, was that we agreed that it would be this, like, titillating relationship, you know, fun for her, therefore she's kind of getting out her yayas. This is a long distance relationship, so, you know, dude's going to go back to where he lives and they're going to make it more of a long distance thing again, which I thought, that's easy. Okay, that's fine. Go get out your yayas. It's great. But then I think even before he showed up, she was starting to tell me, so I'm getting the feels, which we previously said, okay, if you get the feels, say, no, sorry, that can't happen. But because I think when we get some physicality with someone, and this is a warning for everyone, if you get physicality with someone, you may just get, was it that oxytocin you mentioned?
Yes, I was just about to say that when we repeatedly have sex with a particular person, we release all of those bonding hormones. For women, it's oxytocin. For men, it's vasopressin. And those are the same hormones that are released when we are with our children. Oxytocin for women and vasopressin for men. And just like the rest of our hormones, women have a tiny bit of testosterone and men have a tiny bit of estrogen. We each have a tiny bit of the other's hormones, and they are released either during or not during sex, but there is always a physical component to that.
Yeah, I'd guess even with hand-holding and hugging as well.
Of course, when a parent picks up their child and they just love that child to death and they're giving them a great big hug, the hormones are released. So would you mind now, Keen, being a little more specific? So how did it go the first time that, or did she just go off on her own, and or he just came to visit on his own, or anyway, I'm getting to the nitty-gritty.
Yeah. So what happened was he came on his own to stay with the friend group for the weekend, and there was an understanding that she could, like, she didn't know if they would get along in physical space. Of course, she'd always seen him in VR and in text, and you know, there's pictures sent as well, like
titillating pictures. Oh, so she had not met him in person before.
No. And so, yeah, there was this wide variety of possibilities.
Did she indicate to you what it is she was hoping might happen with herself and the two of you dudes?
You know, I'm not certain it was as direct as that. It was more, how would I feel if? Not like, I want this, how do you feel if? So I guess I assumed that anyone who is sexually active would bring up what they would want in that way. Mm. While I'd love, you know, very direct, I want this, how would you feel? You know, I figured it out pretty quick. I consider myself somewhat intelligent. And, you know, so there were lots of questions, lots of little questions, and sometimes that would even change. Like, so this seems to be changing. How do you feel about the possibility of this? Then we'd suss it out. So nitty gritty. We were open to however it might go, as long as, well, we had some parameters, for instance, and I think this is probably a good stance for most people, especially if you're new to opening up. No marks. Don't let them leave any marks, because that could certainly make you feel less like the person is your primary, if that's what you're going for. And that's, of course, that's your thing. You know, what if you want them to mark you? I don't know. But it's not quite my thing. I've learned from a previous relationship. I felt pretty hurt when my primary had marks from a very, shall we say, rough relationship. Not rough. Physically rough relationship with my now ex and their previous partner. Anywho, so there were some parameters. And otherwise, she, during the actual time they were together, they were fine. They actually enjoyed each other's company. Turns out, I didn't really have any doubts. But and I asked her that she let me know if they were going to a hotel. And sure enough, she let me know. So, you know, okay. I feel lucky that I had been into a type of relationship like this before.
So we're not talking a menage a trois, that the three of you would be involved.
Nope.
She just went off to have an outside experience.
Yes.
Okay.
Despite our previous, like, you know, titillating conversations, oh, what if so-and-so was involved right now, you know? So eventually we'll probably work toward that, and that's fine. Otherwise, you know, she's let me have another type of specific experience too, but that was with someone I didn't know, and that was kind of the point. Go somewhere where it was anonymous. And I got my yayas, and unfortunately, when I came back, she was experiencing, what would you call it, kind of a, she felt second, which makes sense. Like, you know, even though we're married and monogamish, she felt that something else was going on, but it did not work very well that it was coinciding with my going out to play. So I come home and do all the things we agreed about, you know, take a shower. Mouthwash is also helpful, I thought. But I was genuinely glad to see her. And, you know, they say, what's the tenfold thing? If you let your love go, that love will return to you tenfold, something like that. I felt that. I came back home and felt great for having been let free, shall we say. I mean, the whole time I was out there, I felt I was blessed, like she gave me her blessing.
Yeah, I have to ask now, when she was off with her friend, companion, whomever he was, did you experience any thoughts or feelings of jealousy?
I did experience those feelings, yeah. This is not my first foray with someone who has a side partner, like more of a long term, which I don't know if this will be. The assumption is, sure, they're already friends. She's already said, wouldn't it be nice if she could see him again? So I get that. Love is love. We just need to figure out where we stand on these things. Yeah, I did want to bring that up. There is a certain burning sensation that does come up when the reality of things hit me a little better. For instance, if I hear about or see a text that is particularly sexy or something, there's this like, hey, this is something she and I went through back when we were recording, and you know, we're kind of past that stage. So it goes. So it all makes sense to me. So yeah, even though it all makes sense in the prefrontal cortex and all, you've talked it all out, I do still feel this kind of burning sensation, which can keep me up at night. But it all feels like logicked out. Like, I've told her what I'm actually comfortable with, what I actually want in the relationship, and it's lasted the test of time. I still want that. I still want that after months.
Could you please share with our listeners what that is?
Which part?
What it is you want.
Oh, very good, yeah. I want for the person I love to be able to get out their yayas, even if I can't offer that, because I want them to come back to me freely. I also don't. I feel that I would be more of a parishioner if I kept them to myself. And I can't say that that's what everyone would want for their reasons for being poly, but, you know, I also want said freedom. And I feel like I can't put that on anyone else if I want it also. What's more, as they say, happy wife, happy life. I want her to be happy because, oh man, does it make a difference in my own life? And so even if it makes me feel kind of, I'll just say burny at times,
the rest of the feeling is love. Had both your wife and you had prior same-sex sexual experiences?
Sure. Yeah, in our lives, yes, we have.
So you knew you were what you were opening yourself up for, that either or both of you might have an encounter.
Yeah, at some point.
Person of the same gender.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we have years ahead of us, I assume, to explore further. And we're both pretty open-minded, so that helps. One thing that struck me a little was when we first talked about it, and about me getting a female partner eventually. We didn't even talk about the depth at which that relationship might go, or whether it be sexual or not. But she was telling me she felt this kind of a rage, this like pre-defensiveness of this person who doesn't exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's really interesting, and thank you for sharing. And so I thought, it's interesting that she still wants to be open, but I think she has even opened up over the year since we have talked about that.
Do you two always communicate with each other about when you're going to have an encounter with someone else outside of your marriage?
I love that question too. When I was first starting, up until now as well, I've been a bit of a romantic and also a true blue person who really likes the check-ins and the I don't know, just making sure everything's okay on both sides, and that can get me into the trouble of not actually experiencing the excitement of what I would want. I've even gone as far as to have dreams where something exciting might happen with whomever is exciting in the dream, and then I'll say, wait, I need to go ask my partner. And of course I wake up and tell my partner, and they're like, what? You need to go? Like, in your dreams, you should just let yourself do the thing. But it's so... I've ingrained it in myself that, and especially from other partners that I've had, say for the one that I had for 3 years, that we should check in. You know, oh, you have this idea that you might want to go home with someone after we go to the club. Definitely check in. You know, ask me first, see how I feel about them. Even if I don't necessarily like that person, I need to know that you're going to at least be safe with them, or that they'll be safe for a relationship. And sometimes that worked, sometimes it didn't. And, you know, I would just kind of sulk with my tail between my legs, like, okay, that one, I missed that one, I guess. That's too bad. But luckily in this relationship, potentially at least, at least if I find a male partner who I want to have basically a quickie with, that has been the open parameter where she says, you should just do it. Like, you don't need to ask me every time. Like, okay, that's the first completely open offering I've ever had from a partner. So I'm not used to that, but okay.
Now, the question is not whether either of you need to ask for it, but do you disclose it after it has happened? Let's just say you're leaving here today and you're on your way home and somehow you encounter this person who tickles your fancy and you go off and have an encounter somewhere.
So the question is if I would then be subject to telling her? Or
Yes, that's the question.
I believe in our particular relationship, yes, I would even feel better if I let her know. I believe everyone who has an open relationship, there are more styles of open relationships than there are people to have them. So you can choose what you want to hear or talk about or be reported on, what details you might want to know.
I'm curious, do you have any rules? Like, when I was married, our rule was no one within our circle of friends.
That has been made a rule. I didn't realize I was walking into, but she definitely made that rule, and that's fine. I think it's a great rule. I think it's a way to not lose strong friendships if you did overstep. I get that. I feel like it would be different if we had a much larger friend group, maybe. Or maybe if one friend wasn't quite a deep friend of both of us, that would really hurt if the sex got in the way of the relationship. But as it stands now, we have like 6 friends between us. So I definitely agree we shouldn't like sully that with our gonads. I had to say, nope, I'm forgetting. There's another detail in there somewhere. What are the rules? So no friends.
No friends, no marks.
That's right. Oh, yes, the details that are open or not open.
No unprotected.
Yes. Yeah, definitely stay safe out there because I don't want those kinds of presents. No, thank you.
Nobody does.
No. Actually, I've heard that some do, but they tend to be self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, I'm going to be wild and you're going to be wild, so screw it, whatever, you know. It's like that's a way to do it. Kind of hurting the community, I think, but that's my opinion. So yeah, I'm on the side of safety. You know, nerdy though it may be, I feel safer, and I like the idea that I'm making others feel safer as well. But so one thing I found in previous relationship as well as this one, when my partner is with another person, it turns out I don't actually want to know the details. Like, I don't either.
I never want to know the details.
Okay.
So and I always make that my rule that I communicate to my partner. I'm like, I don't want to hear whatever you go out and experience. Save it just for you or your therapist. But as your partner, your romantic partner, your sexual partner, I don't want to hear the details.
Yeah. Like, I want to hear that maybe you did the thing. I don't know. Basics are fine, I guess. Or even things like if the energy was good or maybe generally, like, okay, so things were ramping up and then partner said something that was funny or something that made me nervous, or, you know, I don't want to hear that kind of thing because that affects our relationship. Otherwise, if, you know, you're straight up getting out your yayas, like, that's your thing. And what's weird about that is I might actually care to share those types of things if my partner's open to it. Like, oh, there's this funny thing I didn't expect, but then turns out my frisky other wanted, and I want to tell you about that because it was funny, you know? But I don't think she wants to know either.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but am I correct to understand that so far these encounters you've each had individually, there have been no threesomes?
Unfortunately, no. I have yet to experience one, and even she is like, we should fix that at some point. I'm like, yeah, when? Anyway, I feel like I might be too nerdy or something.
Well, if you want to ask our nerdy guest anything about what he's been discussing today, or ask me what we've been discussing, please feel free to call in at 503-231-8187. You're listening to Radical Romance, and this is KBOO FM 90.7. And I want to thank all those who contribute and help make this station what it is. And if you appreciate the station, call in and make a contribution. We're a community-based radio. If it weren't for our contributors, we wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here. Keen wouldn't be here. None of us. So, I'm curious, Keen, going back to interviewing you about your marriage, it seems. Do the two of you foresee kids in your future?
Oh, we've already had that. I walked into her already having a 10-year-old. And, yeah, now an 18-year-old and still lives with us. It's been a thing. In fact, when we were a fresh relationship, asking about, like, what kind of openness we could explore while he was a kid, you know, because some might agree, some not, perhaps, that the kid should know that other types of relationships are open. Like, don't tell them about your sexual exploits either way, because that's, you know, that's not appropriate, of course. But still, you know, you might tell them that there are different types of romantic relationships if you are yourself, in fact, open. However, we decided to keep it basic, keep it simple for him, because we figured they needed more stability, I guess. Instead of, oh, hey, you have a new dad, and also we're open to others coming in and out. And, you know, we decided that it would be more conducive to his mental well-being if we kept it as basic as possible with just us two. And honestly, I think it's been pretty difficult for them to have a new dad. I've been trying my best, but oh man, it's a thing.
Does he have a relationship with his bio dad as well?
Not really, no.
Oh, it's too bad. Yeah. Do you enjoy being a figure like a step-parent?
I do. I can tell the ways in which it has changed my character. I knew it would. Mm-hmm. And it definitely made me grow up faster and get some gray hairs on my chin, literally.
I can see them from here. Yes. Yeah, kids do that. I was, I know our other partner in crime in the next room likes it when I discuss my personal experiences. So when I was in my polyamorous marriage, we had two adopted children, my same-sex partner and I. So our kids had two dads, and I've discussed this before. And we brought additional partners into our relationship and therefore into our family. And the four adults, meaning me, my then husband, my then boyfriend, and his then boyfriend, would have a sit-down Sunday meal with the kids once a week. The four adults would take turns discussing No, I don't mean discuss. I mean cooking, preparing the wheel, the meal. One day it would be one Sunday. It would be my turn, then my husband's, then his boyfriend's, then my boyfriend's, and the kids were always present at the table. And I'll never forget one day, my older son was around 10, and he said to me out of the blue, I think I was taking him to school. He said, "Papa," I said, "Yeah." He said, "Do most married people have a boyfriend if they're gay or if they're a woman?" And I said, "You know, I don't. I think the answer is no. I think the majority of families begin with a nuclear couple, and then they either make babies and start a family, but I think the majority are a nuclear family of two parents, or in more and more cases, one parent and a child or children. And they don't have additional romantic or sexual partners." And that 10 may have been a little young to hear that. I don't know, but
he asked,
right? I mean, he observed, and he had a question about what he was observing. Okay. So, well, he just was asking a question about what he observed about his parents' marriage, that we had boyfriends. Each of his dad had a boyfriend, and they were considered to be part of our family.
And would you say that seems to have changed the kids' mindset at all since from that point? Or they seem...
Well, both of my sons turned out to be heterosexually inclined, or that's how they identify. And by the way, the research turns out the sexual orientation of the parent has no bearing whatsoever on the sexual orientation of the child. So my boys are both heterosexual identified, and they both so far, they're only in their mid-20s now, but anyway, they both so far have preferred monogamous relationships with their girlfriends. That's how they've turned out so far. So with that note, Keen, I want to thank you for being such a willing participant.
It's been good. Thank you.
And we'll talk again soon, I hope. And it's time for me to say goodbye to all of you. Radical Romance airs twice a month, second and fourth Wednesday of every month. Please tune in to KBOO FM 90.7. So I will see you on the fourth Wednesday, or talk with you all on the fourth Wednesday of this month, 2 weeks from now. I hope everyone has a delightful Valentine's Day, and whether you're celebrating it with one partner, two partners, or more, happy Valentine's Day. Make some love, have some fun. I'll talk to you all again in a few weeks.
Hello, I don't even know your name, but I'm hoping all the same. This is more than just a simple hello.
Hello, do I smile and look away? No, I think I smile and stay to see where this might go.
wait till we're alone, somewhere quiet on our own, so that we can fall the rest of the way.
That before the night is through, I'll be talking love to you, meaning every word I say.
Was the last time I felt like this, I was falling in love, falling and feeling I'd never fall in love again. Yes, the
listen to Black Book Talk.